Hello, everybody. Once again, it is time for Retronauts Pocket. I'm Ray Barnholt, and joining me this time are Bob Mackey.
Hey, everybody.
And Matt Leone.
Hello.
From last week. Jeremy could not be with us this time. He had to scoot. Concerning how we've talked about other accessories on the show before, and he didn't really have much to say.
He didn't want to be an accessory to this pod. I'm sorry. Oh. I'll leave now.
That's okay. By his own admission, so... It's okay. This time, though, we are blowing through Super NES accessories. We did NES and then Genesis, and now the other 16-bit Titan, the Super NES. And I think that the funny thing, and I'm sure this will make a great episode, is that the Super NES was notable for not having any accessories for a little while.
I'd say that was a wise decision.
Yeah, compared to the NES, I mean, Nintendo really had no need for zappers or robots up front, at least. Nintendo was already super popular, so they didn't have to do much, except, hey, here's Mario 4, go at it.
Yeah.
So in those early months, we don't have much to talk about, but I will cover some things I'm sure you remember. So let's start with the Super NES mouse, which most people probably just remember as Mario Paint. That came with the mouse. Of course, the mouse was a two-button mouse, and it had a little ball and a little nice plastic mouse pad. You don't see those anymore. But it was the crucial part of Mario Paint, and I think we'll probably just end up talking about Mario Paint now, but I mean, that was just a great thing to have, and I'm sure really drove the graphic design careers of some people of our generation.
You see, it's like I convinced my parents to buy it because it's educational, and then I'll just play the fly swatting game all day.
Yeah.
That game came out at a time when the desktop PC was not a common feature in a house. It was still a little pricey, so I feel like it was sort of like a way to train children how to use the mouse. And a lot of the instructions that came with it were like, this is what a mouse is. Mm-hmm. I remember there was an article in Nintendo Power like explaining like how to use a mouse or like the uses of a mouse.
Yeah.
And one thing about that is when mice still had like the little balls inside, when they weren't just laser mice, the game came with the little cleaning tool.
Oh, yes.
You would scrape the gunk off of the wheels inside of the mouse. I kept that tool. I used it with every mouse I had until I got the laser mice.
Not bad.
It's an amazing tool.
Yeah, and that thing is like a real example of Nintendo ingenuity.
Yeah.
Design ingenuity. Like, hey, let's pack in a thing where you can clean it. Oh, great, yeah. Instead of, you know, with any other mouse that you buy, you have to take it apart and probably run it under the sink or something.
Or scratch your grody fingernail across it.
Yeah.
And then feel bad about yourself.
Make it grotier.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, Nintendo Power did support that game quite a while. They made like supplemental content for it, and they made that great player's guide that gave you all these examples
it came
to copy
out,
down. And
I think a few years after the game, though, or maybe like
pretty much around the same time.
Okay, weird. I didn't see it until then. Maybe it just when
they
it
had like
up.
A giant supplement in the magazine, and then they sort of extended that into the player's guide.
Right. So. They had like regular supplements in the magazine, didn't they? Like here's to this month's Mario Paint pattern or something like that.
If you didn't learn how to use a mouse, then you probably learned how to use a painting suite like that. And then also, you know, there's the whole music thing. I mean, now Mario Paint music is like a whole new instrument for some people.
Yeah.
It's like another way to make chiptunes.
Do you consider, are you like an extremist when it comes to Mario Paint compositions? Are you like Mario Paint only, or are you okay with the composer tool? Because there are some things you can do in Mario Paint that you can't do. There's some things you can do with the composer you can't do with Mario Paint.
Yeah, true. I mean... I sort of dabbled with it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I didn't really make anything that great. Although I was playing Desaimon Plus for PS1, PSN. And that also has a painting suite and also a music making suite with sort of the same sorts of icons you can use. And so the sounds in that game were so accurate to the Doogie Howser theme that I just recreated the first few bars of the Doogie Howser theme in Desaimon Plus. I made a YouTube video of it somewhere. You should find it.
Put the link up.
I'll link it for sure. So take a look at that. Not Mario Paint, but yeah, that's the kind of power one can wield. But anyway, there were other Super NES mouse games, which is kind of a crazy thing because so many of these third-party controllers really don't go anywhere with anybody else, and they were made by third parties as well. But Nintendo made Mario and Wario, which was quite obviously going to come out here, but did not at the last minute. It's made by Game Freak, first of all, and it's kind of like a Lemmings game. Where you use the mouse to control this fairy character, and Mario and Luigi or Princess Peach all have buckets on their heads that they can't take off for some reason because Wario's a dick and decided to just make these permanent buckets
filled with glue.
Yeah, apparently. So you have these blind characters essentially, and you have to lead them and make these platforms and make ladders and things.
And your avatar is like a little fairy.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah. I did mention that.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. So yeah, that's like one of the, I guess, non-educational mouse games. But there was also a third-party game called Shiren's Revenge, which is basically like a Ninja Star throwing simulator. It's I mean, it's like a light gun game in that sense. It is paced much like a light gun game, but you just throw throwing stars and you use your kunai to slice enemies as they come up at you. And that was like the hardcore mouse game. That was the one you get if you were so bored of Mario Paint and everything else.
That's what the mouse is.
I can only kill so many flies.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty decent in that regard. I mean, not a great game on the whole, but you know, a mouse game to look for. And I think there were some other outliers that sort of like passively used the mouse for some things. I guess
did we talk about King Arthur's World? That was like one of the games that.
Okay. Yeah.
That's actually the only game that was I remember being advertised as using the mouse.
Right.
And I think it was a very Lemmings-ish sort of game as well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I was thinking it was like a strategy game, but yeah, no. Yeah, it was more like Lemmings-ish.
I just remember like a lot of tiny characters.
Yes.
But some things surprised me. Like I just did a live stream of Clock Tower a few weeks ago or a week ago, and it's totally like a PC adventure game, but there's no mouse support. And it strikes me as something like they totally missed an opportunity, but at the same time, who was going to pay to code that in if no one was going to use it, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And like I said, that's really what happens with a lot of these accessories, such as our next item, the Super Scope, which was the Super NES light gun, but it is really a bazooka.
Yeah.
I would say, as in terms of the pure game library that supported it, though, it's probably one of the last successful light guns. Although, I mean, the Gun Con pretty easily beats it out. But so I'll split hairs further and just say 16-bit. Mm. So, but yeah, the Super Scope did get quite a few games. Not a ton, but more than you would think, for sure. Of course, it came with Super Scope 6, which was a six-pack of games that were just really weird, sort of. I think it was made by Tosei, and these games are just look weird.
Really?
And
okay.
Sound weird. It's like
basically tech demos.
Yeah.
Yeah, essentially. You have like a weird puzzle game where you shoot blocks, and it's like gooey things come out of them. I don't know. A very odd sort of thing to include.
See, to me, from a marketing perspective, that's what I always remembered. Like, I never owned a Super Scope. I used it at, like, a friend's house or something. But you would see, you know, the Menacer on Genesis marketed with Terminator 2, and then you see the Super Scope marketed with this weird kind of minigame collection. And it seemed like this one was much more family-friendly, and this one was, like, much more aggressive.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, as we... People call the gun the Super Scope 6. It is actually the name of the cartridge. Just FYI. Mm. Get it right. No, just kidding.
What if you're on a crime-fighting team with five other people and they all have Super Scopes? Can you be the Super Scope 6?
Yeah. I'm surprised they never made like a comic about
that. That'd be amazing. Mm. I have to say that like I didn't have one because I at least like to think I made smart decisions as a kid. But my friend did, and it did make you feel like a badass holding that thing.
Oh, sure.
You held it up, had like a little lens to help you with aiming. Because aiming was always a big problem with light guns, you know, getting a good beat on something.
So Nintendo's solution to that was to make a separate receiver that you put on top of the TV. And then that would, sort of like a Wii sensor bar now, sort of, this would more accurately predict where things are going on. In fact, let's listen to the Super Scope commercial.
Introducing Super Scope 6. Remote powered and laser accurate. Precise to a single television pixel. It comes with six great games and is yours for under $60, all of which gets you into the game. Like never before. Super Scope 6, only for Super Nintendo. Now you're playing with power.
Superpower, yes. So, even they call it the Super Scope 6. What's the problem? But yes, for under $60. So, I mean, for the price of a game, you get a game and the gun.
Mm.
What value?
Six games.
Yeah. Right. They're sort of correct in saying how accurate it was. I don't think it was right down to a pixel because you still had to deal with that infrared receiver that was on the top of it.
Yeah, and who's to say what a pixel is when you have like an RF adapter hooked up to your crappy TV, you know?
But like I said, there were quite a few Super Scope games. First of all, Yoshi's Safari, which is also kind of weird.
Do we know who developed that?
Weird, but... I'll say Tosei.
Okay,
why not?
Yeah.
It feels like it. It is a first-person Mario game, basically. You ride on Yoshi's back and shoot all the enemies that come hopping onto the road. By the way, the Japanese name is called Yoshi's Road Hunting.
It did feature a return of the Koopa Kids, which they were gone for a long time after that.
Yeah,
it feels to me like something that should be in Nintendo Land. Like,
Yeah,
you're right. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. Also, Bob, also an interesting canonical note is that the first time an English Mario game used Peach instead of Princess.
That's
Toadstool.
Right. Yeah. But
oh my god.
She went back to Toadstool for Mario RPG and everything else until whatever.
So weird. Please check out Yoshi's.
I think that was just a localization mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. It probably was. It is a very odd game because it is so unnaturally violent. I mean, it is Mario who is holding what is clearly a super scope and just shooting these beams at the
That's
enemies.
Probably why it's not in Nintendo Land, Matt.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't mean like a port, but yeah.
Yoshi's
Trust. It has that kind of spirit to it of like, you know, taking a game and putting it in a different perspective,
right.
A different genre.
Yeah, totally. I didn't like it that much. I thought I would love it when I first got it, but it just got too hard after a while. It's just like, I don't know. Not one of the best sort of light gun games, which is a shame because it's Mario. Who wouldn't love that? Also, Battle Clash, which was sort of a robot fighting game. You shoot mechs as they fly around the screen and you try and shoot their weak spots. It's actually a little bit more like Punch-Out in that sense.
You fight them one at a time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just stages where each one is a different opponent. And then, shockingly, even for a Super Scope game, it got a sequel, Metal Combat.
That's right.
which you would never think, but yeah. So those two games are actually sort of regarded as like the top tier Super Scope games, and they are actually well put together and pretty fun because of that. Also, games like X-Zone was a shooting game. I actually don't even have much of a recollection about it, but other things like that. So yeah, I mean, the Super Scope, despite light guns sort of getting a bad rap for a while and not really getting a lot of games unless they came from the manufacturer themselves, like Super Scope did well. I mean, much like the mouse, it's like it got more games than you would think.
Yeah.
And
was there some game called Tin Star?
Yes.
Robot Cowboy, was it Super Scope?
Yes.
Okay,
it was.
I thought so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tin Star, published by Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of.
Were all the Super Scope games published by Nintendo?
No, I just mentioned X-Zone was not. Okay. So yeah, that's one. There you go.
Just
yeah.
one.
There you go.
Well, that's kind of telling. Like, we don't necessarily know if it was successful so much as Nintendo is putting support behind
it. Yeah, you know what? I don't mean to put too much weight on the word successful, but
yeah, it was
just the mere fact that it got more games than you might think is kind of an interesting point.
I mean, it did seem like people were buying it. I don't mean to knock it or anything.
Yeah. Also featured in the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Oh, you're right.
The Devo guns.
God.
And then actually, as a twist of that, featured in a Japanese ad flyer for the Super Scope, which featured like the logo from the Super Mario movie, like Mario and Luigi from the movie.
Oh, wow.
Standing in that flyer. Mm. I don't know what happened there.
Some great synergy there.
Yeah. But they did release Super Scope in Japan and got much of the same games. So, yeah. Next up, probably my favorite Super NES accessory, the Super Game Boy.
Oh, good.
Mm. Yes. Everyone knows this. Lets you play Game Boy games in color, sort of.
I have so many memories of this. Mm-hmm. I love it.
And yeah, I mean, it was great when I first heard about it in Nintendo Power. I was like, holy shit, finally I can play these on TV. It's like having developer equipment right in your home. Mm-hmm. You can play Game Boy games on TV. And yeah, I think I got a lot of use out of it. I especially like the borders. I like the different borders they provided. And
how they had like a screensaver feature where if you let them sit long enough, which I did, and it would take like 20 minutes, you'd get a little tiny animation. Yes. Like
I love that countryside border. Which
that's
is like,
great, too. I like the movie theater as well.
Yes, nostalgia about Super Game Boy borders. It does exist.
You're here.
Yeah.
Welcome to my hell. And also Super Game Boy, I'm sorry, you're going to talk about this, but like certain Game Boy games would have enhanced features and they would have their own borders, like custom borders for and stored in the cartridge itself.
It launched with Donkey Kong, which was the first Super Game Boy enhanced game. Sort of like how Pokemon launched with the 2DS. That sort of nice pairing. So you could get that in the Super Game Boy, and you got like a fuller color Game Boy game in Donkey Kong. And there were other companies. I mean, Nintendo did make it a standard that you could make Super Game Boy enhanced games, and some third parties did, although they did not quite put as much effort into splashing it with color as
Nintendo. I feel like Donkey Kong was the one that hit all the things it could do, basically.
I mean, even Donkey Kong Land is just like a crappy job.
Yeah.
Probably because like you have that 8-bit pre-rendered.
Oh, God, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah, exactly. So that did not work out. But the Super Game Boy was great nonetheless because you could at least customize the colors and make things look more like they would on NES, I suppose. And you only have four colors to work with, so you do have to be a bit creative in some respects. But yeah, it was great. And then it led to the Game Boy Player for GameCube, and that did not have as many cool features, but you could still play Game Boy games on TV.
I find it really disappointing that the 3DS does not offer the amount of customization for emulation that the Super Game Boy did. Like, you lose all of those features. Like, I complained about this before, but Donkey Kong 94, you don't get the cool border, the extra colors, and it'd be great great if you could take those games and just, you know, you can choose whatever color you want or whatever they have available for each of the four Game Boy colors. So in a way, it also taught you a lot about how the games work themselves. It's just like there are four shades, and here's how they put together different colors and whatever. So.
Yeah, for sure. And then you got to see how some developers badly implemented those color separations and like, making characters the same color palette as the background and whatnot. And, you know, some games were so enhanced that they included other games on them. Like, I'm sure I mentioned this before, but Space Invaders for Game Boy, Nintendo put the Super NES port onto the cartridge. And so if you put the Game Boy game into the Super Game Boy, it would let you choose the Super NES version.
Were there any other examples like that?
No.
Wow, that's amazing. That's incredible.
Yeah. So you get to... two games in one, sort of, although it's just Space Invaders, so I don't know. There was also Hori released a customized sort of Super Game Boy controller in Japan for the Super Game Boy, and it's shaped like a Game Boy. It sort of looks like it has the maroon buttons on it, and it has all the buttons on the face, basically. So they're like hotkeys, basically, for all the different Super Game Boy commands. Pretty nice. You can actually probably still easily find one to buy anywhere, because I think there's a surplus floating around the internet, because I got one fairly easily and fairly cheaply. So yeah, and they look, I mean, they look neat anyway, cause it's like, oh, it's like a wide little Game Boy without a screen.
Wait, one second, I'm sorry. Wasn't there a Super Game Boy 2?
There was a Super Game Boy 2 in Japan
only. I still don't know what that is. I forget what it is.
It's not completely improved, but they did add the Link port.
Okay, so you can, can you play like a Game Boy game against someone playing on a TV? Is that what it's for? Wow,
yeah,
okay.
Totally. It kind of came out just before the Game Boy Color, so it doesn't support Game Boy Color games or anything, but that's the big differentiating feature. I think it has some different borders as well, but other than that, it looks pretty much the same. When I was in Japan last, I could not find any, so people really, I think, keep hold of them. But yeah, moving on to some other sorts of Super NES accessories, at least ones that I would see around all the time, the Capcom CP Soldier. This was an import. I think you'd probably find it in EB Games a lot of the time. It was just Capcom's own fighting pad for Street Fighter and whatnot, but it just looked weird. It was like a handlebar.
It had like, you hold it at different angles.
Had like, the left hand had like a handlebar grip, and then the right half of it was like this panel with all the buttons on that you would use to like type, you know, typing motion sort of on the buttons, like an arcade stick. But smaller, and
it reminds me of like was it the Negicon or whatever that Namco did? It's just so strange that you would be holding the left side at a different angle than you would be holding the right side, and you had, I don't remember if it was up or down, but it was some like 45 degree angle. And I never actually owned one, but it just looked so awkward, and like Super Nintendo controller had six buttons, so
yeah. But I guess,
anything
to appeal to the fighting game fans.
Sure. Like, and then the normal controller, like, I'm right-handed, so pressing the left trigger was always a little unusual for me. And
me too.
This would solve it. But if you're going to go in and buy a controller to solve that kind of problem, you'd probably just go buy a joystick.
Yeah, for sure. And it was probably at some crazy import markup, too, if you found it in the store. That was all. I just thought that was a neat little one to talk about. I want to move on to one that surely no one has really heard about. That is the Life Cycle Exercise Bike.
I remember.
I know somebody who had this.
Holy shit. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
I don't know. Did you see it? I never saw it, but... I think I'm not going to say who they are because it might be embarrassing that you have this thing in your house, but it was purchased for them and they didn't really use it. And they've told me about it in college. And I think I saw it at their house when I visited at one point, but I do know someone who owned this thing.
Yeah. Under a tarp.
But there was like one game for it, right?
No, two.
Oh my Jesus.
Let me tell you all about it. Yes. This was an exercise bike compatible with the Super NES. You'd plug it right in, and two games were made for it. The first was Mountain Bike Rally, so obvious choice there. The second was Speed Racer.
Oh God!
The Speed Racer Super NES racing game supported this life cycle.
That doesn't make any sense.
I think
they found like the right contract with the gym or something like that, they probably could have done it right. Like a lot of your typical kind of gym equipment has little mini games built into it.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they're not necessarily like up to the quality of Super NES games, but you know they we'll give you like a little simplified gamification thing.
Yeah.
Sure. It's like now you're climbing up a mountain.
Right. Yeah. So, certainly was not cheap, but, that was just another little artifact of the 90s. Life cycle. I think there was like a Genesis version or some sort of competition. I don't quite remember, but yeah, it was definitely for the Super NES and definitely had those two games. Speed Racer game was shitty regardless.
Who made that?
Accolade.
That's right.
that's basically the main list. I do want to touch upon some other weird Japanese ones that some of us know, and I don't want to leave anything hanging because I don't want to get the comments about them. But nevertheless, we have the Laser Birdie, which is basically like a little putting accessory.
It's like that Wii U Tech demo, right? That everyone was all
right. Yeah, essentially, this was made, I believe, by Nintendo and Ricoh. And it came with a little golf game you could use for it, and yeah, it was just like a, I can't explain it that well in just verbalizing it, but anyway, it's just a little like a toy putting green thing that some other people have used to like practice their putting, but it had like a, but you could use like a full size club on it and just swing it across what this infrared sensor would use, and it would just read the swing and use it in the game. So yeah, a very early version of what we all do on Wii, you know, or what we all did for 5 minutes. But yeah, kind of a slick-looking thing, nonetheless. There's the Sufami Turbo, which is kind of like the Super NES version of the Aladdin, which was, you put these tiny cartridges into the big cartridge, and now the tiny cartridges are so cheap compared to the big ones that you can save money. So this was made by Bandai, Banpresto, and yeah, it was just like a glut of anime crap that came out for this thing. It actually had two slots, so you could like use like a data exchange feature. You could put two cartridges in there, and boom, now you're trading stuff. You're trading Goku cards, Kamen Rider, whatever. And that was that. And of course, I cannot leave out the Satellaview.
Right.
You may think was made by Bandai, but I think some people confuse it with the Sufami Turbo. But no, it was made by Nintendo and a joint venture by a radio station called Saint Giga. And they were sort of an up-and-coming radio station at the time, so they were progressive enough to get on board with this thing. And basically, it was a way to broadcast games and game content to players. And the really interesting thing is that it could still use broadcast audio, so like full quality FM audio through this receiver that attached to the bottom of the Super Famicom, one of the only things that did, by the way. And so you would download a game, and then you would basically listen to like a radio program that went with it. And these would usually be tied to some sort of competition, like, you know, you'd have to get through these stages in Mario before the broadcast ended or whatnot, and see how you ranked against everybody else in the country or whoever was using it. And yeah, it was just one of those really, really super interesting like network gaming initiatives, and they supported it for many years. I think from 95 until like at least 2000 is when they shut it down. Maybe, I can't remember exactly, but it's a great thing, and very interesting because so many games got lost as a result of that, because not just the data, because you could store them on special rewritable cartridges, but like the broadcast data would have to be like recorded, so you'd have to take like VHS recordings of everything.
That's true.
And there, you can find those on like Nico Nico or YouTube or what have you. Otherwise, like before everyone really knew about that, like we would all see these ROMs for like BS Zelda and BS F-Zero, and it was like
best
these
names ever.
Yeah, broadcast satellite, and it was all these special versions of these games. That's where we thought, oh, they're remaking Zelda 1. Look, oh no, it's just a little dinky thing for the satellite thing. And they would also take portions out of Super Mario All-Stars and make little competitions out of that. They right. made even greater original games like Mario Excite Bike. I can't believe I got to play that.
I like Wrecking Crew 98.
Wrecking Crew 98. Actually, that was released on cartridge.
Oh, it was? Okay. Yeah. Did it debut on Satellaview, or am I just misguided?
Possibly. Okay. Possibly. There was, actually, related to that, there was Special T-Shot, which became Kirby, but then went back to become Special T-Shot for the Satellaview.
Okay.
Kirby's Dream Course, I mean.
Yeah.
There's things like that, and they really did try and build a community out of it and keep things going. So you would listen to these little radio dramas as the game was going on, and it would be pretty interesting. Definitely just a moment lost in time, except that you can still find some remnants of them around. It's a shame that, you know, I didn't really get to experience it. We didn't, rather. But yeah, that's the last thing I wanted to talk about, and that's really the bigger hitters of the Super NES accessory line. There were other
Miracle Piano.
Oh, was that just NES? Or?
I think it was on a few different...
Okay, yeah.
I think it was on both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably should have said that about the NES one.
Hmm.
But like I said last time on Genesis, there were a lot of crossover accessories because everybody was getting on that bandwagon. So you have things like that TurboTouch D60 and the Aura Interactor and a bunch of things that worked multi-platform. And even other things like the Capcom Fighting Stick that went with the CP Soldier. just a bunch of joysticks as well.
Yeah, it was really simple, but I had an ASCII gamepad that had the turbo and all of the... Like, the buttons were the Super Famicom colors, yep. And I only use that. I love that controller.
That is a great controller, yeah, the ASCII pad for Super NES, yeah, mm-hmm. for sure. I still have it, yep, it's great. There was also the Super Advantage made by the same company, not Nintendo, as you would think, but it's... called the Advantage, and it looks kind of like a Super Nintendo. They put the big purple buttons on it that aren't actually buttons, but just like a weird sort of flare to put on there. Not the greatest joystick, but there you have it. Anything else that I missed? Anybody? No? That seems to be the story with these accessory episodes. That's all I got for this one. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Bob, for coming by. Bob, by the way, thanks for coming in as you usually do, because we do this show together.
That's true. It's sort of my obligation.
Yeah. And Matt, thank you for sticking by, as always. Everybody else, you can catch us on Retronauts.com, on Twitter, Retronauts. Give us good reviews on iTunes. Just be nice. Be cool, and we'll be cool to you. And yeah, find us again on the blogs. See what things I link to about this. We'll see. And yeah, enjoy yourselves. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.